chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Todd Fenders on the show today. Todd is a Senior Vice President and the CIO at Clayco. Well, Todd Fenders, I have been looking so forward to this time with you. I know what a busy guy you are right now, so I just appreciate you taking the time to be on the Something Extra podcast today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. I've been excited to do this finally. Good thing to put on my resume that I got on Lisa's podcast.
Hey, well, it's a good thing to put on my resume too, that I had Todd Fenders on the podcast. So it works both ways, but you and I have been connected for a while now. Even when you were the CIO for Barry Waymiller, you know, you have been a big champion for TechLX, our technology leadership experience, which we're so grateful for. We're in Inspire CIO together. There's all kinds of connections here, but I've just been really looking forward to this. And I know that your wisdom, Todd, your experience, the things that you've done are going to help our listeners on their own leadership journey. So I'd love to take it way back and tell me a little bit about how you grew up. I know a little bit about that. I know you grew up in a small rural town in Iowa.
Yep.
But, you know, tell me a little bit about growing up for you.
Yeah, it's interesting because I look at, you know, other CIOs in the St. Louis area, and John Meister's one that we've talked about before, you know, and his story is kind of the polar opposite of mine, because I know he moved around a lot as a young kid, and I lived in the same place for the first 40 years of my life. So I lived within like 2 miles of a small town in central Iowa until I was 40 years old, and you know, went to a really small school, had 36 in my graduating class. The town I lived in was 300 people, you know, so everybody knows everything about everybody in those types of communities. So there's no escaping. But, you know, I look at my upbringing, you know, was raised by really humble, God-fearing parents, had great community around me from church and just friends. And really I look at that upbringing and that grounding as a big part of who I am. Cause it, you know, it really teaches you a lot about, just the value of other people, you know, and that you're not the center of the universe and there's bigger things than just you. And I think that kind of carried through my, you know, early college careers. You know, I went to 2 years of junior college in Marshalltown, Iowa, really, really solid community college. Worked at Hy-Vee, you know, Hy-Vee is kind of an institution in Iowa, doing just grocery bagging. But there, even I look back at what I learned in that early job, you know, just customer service. And then, you know, I was probably 19 years old and they made me a shift manager, you know, in charge of a whole group of people. you know, and I, you don't really think about it at the time, but I look back and that's probably where my, appreciation and kind of hunger to be a leader probably really started, you know, and it was just such a fun, challenging experience, to lead people that are twice your age and doing things like that. So, yeah, I think I am who I am today, you know, because of that, those early experiences and just the great upbringing that I had.
Yeah, I completely, that completely resonates with me, you know, and, you know, I know I've read that, that you've said that, you know, I read something that you wrote that you were brought up to know that life was not about you, you know, that you were here to make a difference and that you were here to impact, make an impact. And I was too, you know, my parents were the same way. In fact, you know, I was thinking about this, reading about you, Todd, and, you know, I grew up in a small town too, not a little bit bigger than 300, but it was a small town. Sure. And I'm telling you what, my mom knew everybody.
Oh yeah.
And so if I said, hey, I'm going to Sarah's house, my mom knew if I'd gone to Sarah's house, you know, you could not get away with it. But I was thinking about you and I was thinking, I'd love to sometime do a study on this. Really, Todd, because, you know, that small town and the effects that it has on your upbringing, you've got tight-knit families, you know, many times centered around a church.
Yep.
So faith is a big part of it. Yep. Very tight community, very relationship-centric, and a lot of times conservative values.
Yep.
And it'd be really interesting to do a whole study because I can't tell you how many successful people I've met, and they grew up in a very small town, just like you and I did.
Yeah, and I think there's an accountability that comes with that, you know, because again, you're not going to get away with anything because
that's right.
Because everybody knows. And so you just kind of deal with that, you know, and I think some people might complain about that. But for me, I tend to be kind of a rule follower. And so it worked for me because it's like, well, I just need to be who I am because everybody's going to know if I do something, you know? And so I think that accountability is something that does come from, because, you know, you live in a big, when you live in a big city or in a bigger community, you know, you can kind of go a little bit away and nobody knows you. So you can kind of be different because they don't know you. And that can kind of be a trap.
I agree. Yeah. I love that. Well, I know you'd already mentioned John Meister. And I know that as a young kid, you were really enamored with technology. He was too. I think, I can't remember now, Todd, but I think he said either he knew 4 or 5 programming languages by the time he graduated.
Yeah.
And you said you did too. You fell in love with technology and, you know, it's funny, both of you guys are now CIOs for really iconic brands. So I think that's really interesting.
It is funny, you know, you think about the time where John and I grew up, you know, kind of in the same generation, roughly. Technology was really just exploding onto the scene.
Yes.
You know, I remember when I did my first internship in 1990, you know, the company was just starting to get in some personal computers, some of the IBM PS1s and, you know, other just personal computers. They were just starting to get away from the mainframe terminals, you know? And so we really grew up in a great time. It just exploded and just changed. And again, if you have the personality that likes that, it was very, very fun. I know it was unsettling for a lot of people, you know, just all that change, but I was reading the book called Super Mario recently, you know, just about the journey of Nintendo. And I think back, they were mentioning a lot of the old video games because that's kind of the Atari and Intellivision and all those. Those kind of piqued a lot of us, you know, piqued our interest and got us thinking about technology just with the games and stuff that we were exposed to.
That's right. That's right. Do you remember Pong?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I had one of those. Yep.
Oh, we did too.
For sure.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I know that you went to University of Iowa and went on and got your MIS degree and then your MBA. But, you know, your first job, and I remembered reading that. You said your internship, you did that internship, Todd, in 1990, and you said you knew that technology was going to be in your future.
Oh, yeah.
You just that was your path, right?
For sure. Yeah. I was pre-med for a semester in junior, junior college. I'm like, no, this ain't happening. Not
for me.
Yeah. And then, you know, I kind of had a friend that was in the computer science arena, you know, those degrees, the MIS degree was very new. Didn't really know what I was getting into. But yeah, it didn't take long to get a taste and to really start to see that this was something that I really wanted to do. At the same time, though, I know that I didn't. I don't think anybody really knew what was happening, right?
Nobody.
I mean, how could we envision where it is today? Not a chance. But even then, it was like I knew I liked it, and I knew that it seemed to be kind of the wave of the future, but it was hard to know. And it was
hard to know for sure. Right.
It became pretty evident pretty fast.
It became evident pretty fast. And I tell you what, and I mean, I know you know this, but Todd, you know, think of the organizations today that, you know, I mean, MasterCard, for instance, says we're not a credit card company. Right. We are a technology company. I mean, really, technology's got to be part of everyone's strategy, you know, in today's world. And we'll talk a lot about that. But your first job out of college was with an amazing company. Love this company, Emerson.
Yep.
You started out in Marshalltown, Iowa. I think you may have started in desktop support area.
Right at the bottom.
Help desk
on the start. Yep.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, every one of those roles that you had have played a role in where you are today. Yep. And it's kind of funny. I don't know. I think you know Gary Vanderhaar from MasterCard. And I think Gary's been at MasterCard for 18 years. And he always laughs and says, I've had 9 lives.
Yeah.
I've been there for 18 years. But you had a lot of lives too at Emerson, because you started out there. You were manager of IT, then director of IT, director of global data center services, which we're going to talk a lot about, CIO for the Emerson Climate, and then CIO and VP of Information Technology for Commercial and Residential Solutions. So an amazing, amazing company. But tell our listeners, because Todd, we have listeners from all over the globe that listen to the Something Extra podcast. So if you're in St. Louis, you know, you're very familiar with Emerson. But for those listeners outside that are not as familiar, tell just a little bit about Emerson, because it is just an amazing company.
Yeah, for sure. And it was such a great opportunity to just in the early 90s, I was just happy to get a job.
right.
In fact, when my boss called me kind of after my internship and offered me the job, he didn't even tell me how much he was going to pay me. And I said, I'll take it. and then he said, well, do you want to know how much you're going to make? And I said, yeah, that'd probably be good, but it's not going to change my mind. So,
right.
So, because Emerson, you know, really was, and the Fisher brand, which was in Marshalltown, were just such strong company culture, leadership, development, process oriented, you know, and what you find at a company like Emerson that has that strong, rich history is that, you know, you're going to be challenged every day, and you're going to be challenged to be a leader. If you're going to move into management, you're not just going to be an IT leader. They're going to challenge you to be a business leader, and that continued throughout my whole career. So you just have ingrained in you that, you know, you don't get any mandates. You got to go out and earn it. And there's productive tension created between the corporate and the division, and so you really just learn how to influence, how to negotiate, how to do a service oriented approach, and you learn discipline, you learn process. Because Emerson, even still today, right, it's changed a lot today, but it's still at its core. It's a disciplined, very financially savvy organization. And so being in that for over 26 years, working with people like Kathy McGillicutt and Jake Fritz, who's a good friend of mine as well. It was just such a great place to learn. And what's interesting, you know, we talk about, you know, the, the trend of more and more, you know, CIOs kind of moving outside of just the technology space and becoming either CEOs or COOs or whatever, you know, that there's a really good example just right from Emerson, because Greg Carmichael was CIO at Emerson and then went to Fifth Third Bank and moved, you know, he worked his way into the CEO chair, you know, and I just spoke with him a few months ago, just got a chance to talk to him, you know, and just hearing his journey, it's just such an inspiration for CIOs, you know. And again, I never even envisioned myself being a CIO early on because I'm just a punk, but I think it's an exciting thing now for technology leaders, like you said, because it's integral to the business in every way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, that CIO to CEO, I mean, really, because technology is leading the charge and it's change, you know, it's more than just keeping the lights on.
Yep.
It's so much more than that. And, there's a lesson there. We could do a whole podcast on that, because for organizations that are not thinking that way, you know, you might want to consider thinking that way, right?
Very true.
That it's strategic.
Yep.
Well, I want to talk about this a little bit, but you took on this gargantuan project, and you took the lead on this 2008 to 2011 timeframe, where you were building out a global data center. I think you were actually consolidating some data centers.
Yep.
It was a big consolidation effort. I think you guys had 100 centers or something like that worldwide.
It was a lot.
And it was a lot, right? And so you took the lead on that. Now I have to ask you this, you know, you did this like with 150 workers. I know that you guys blew your sustainability goals out of the water. You had said you can tell more about that. I think you had 99.982% uptime. Crazy. But let me ask you, did you raise your hand for that, or were you tapped on the shoulder for that? How did you position yourself to take the lead on that project?
Yeah. So, obviously that whole journey was an incredible journey. A lot of people involved to make that whole program successful. But it got started, and I got involved because our data center in Marshalltown, where I lived, was chosen to be the backup and recovery development center. So we were going to retrofit our building to be part of that ecosystem, along with the production data center in St. Louis. And as we got into that process, I noticed that they were still looking for a director of the data center team. And yeah, so I raised my hand and said, hey, you know, I'd be interested. And kind of one thing led to another, and I was given the opportunity. But what was interesting was, you know, as I stepped into that role, guys like Keith Gisselson were leading the charge on building the data center and just doing a great job. And there was a bunch of other people really, really leading the charge. But I stepped in, and the team, you know, at that time was 25 people. And we're faced with running two data centers and consolidating 50 to 100 data centers into it and implementing all new infrastructure in those. We weren't moving things. We were creating new, all while keeping Emerson running. And to make the story even better, because you can't make this stuff up, I started in November. In January, we had to DR our largest ERP system. And so, right, 2 months in, not a fun time, you know? And so, That whole period of time, and you know, there's, I can tell you a million stories. That whole thing was huge for just learning how to lead in a crisis, how to lead a team to do just unbelievably crazy things and hit crazy deadlines, and try to, we you know, having the faith values and family values that I have, trying to not have people getting divorced and losing their families because we were I literally had to call a guy one time, and he had to pull his family out of a birthday party to come work on a Unix system. Right. And so you're just doing crazy things for crazy amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
And as hard as it was, it's such a gratifying journey to look back on because of all the things that you learn about crises, about management, about, you know, technology and people and just building a team, you know, because we built that team, to over 100, 150 people. We did amazing things, you know. Jake came in and took it to another level, and they continue to just advance and do it. It was it's an amazing thing to be part of, for sure. I'm not sure I have the energy to do it again. But haven't done it one time.
That was 12 years ago or 10 years ago. Yeah. I mean, so incredible, you know, and I know that, you know, the facility really, I mean, cause you said it just instilled such a sense of pride and actually kind of became the gold standard where you guys were doing tours.
It was a show center. Yeah, it definitely was because we had a tremendous amount of Emerson content with Emerson Network Power, Emerson Process Management. We had really built it with the intent that it would be a showcase, that it would be a place where we could do tours, where we could bring people in, we could sell Emerson product. And really, we engaged Dell and EMC and some of the other technology providers in the same way, right? And then you mentioned sustainability earlier. You know, we had a lot of very innovative designs that, you know, I can't remember how many miles, but our team really, really looked hard at different materials, how they were used, and by just changing routing and the way that like copper or the way that other cable management and materials, all that stuff was done. You know, we were able to attain a pretty good LEED rating and had solar panels on the roof that helped feed in to the energy consumption. Just a very, very cool building for sure.
Yeah. Remarkable. Well, I know you guys won a lot of awards and, you know, and I know Todd, just knowing how humble you are. I mean, I know that you said you would say that this is a team award, but it earned you the title of Facility Executive of the Year in 2011. And I know that, you know, you would say you couldn't have done it without your team, but you know, so much more. I'm so glad that you talked about, you know, the solar panels. Go read about that if you're at all thinking about, you know, consolidation of data centers. Todd is a really good case study for you there. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Todd Fenders on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Todd Fenders, the CIO for Clayco. Well, Todd, we've been talking about all kinds of things. You got this amazing award that I know that you would credit to your team. You had a heavy lift there. I mean, what a massive, gargantuan project you took on. But, you know, I loved what you said because I didn't know if you got tapped on the shoulder for that role or if you actually raised your hand and you actually put your name in the hat and said, I'm interested in being the leader on that role. You know, I mean, what gave you the courage and the confidence, Todd, that you needed to actually step in that role? Because sometimes, and we hear this, right, fear will hold us back from being all that we were purposed to be. But obviously, in this case, you overcame that fear, if you had any.
I probably should have been a little more afraid, maybe. it probably naivety, maybe going
right.
I think Mindy, my wife, would testify to this. You know, I think I like challenges. I don't like being bored. I don't like just doing the same thing. So when I saw what was happening, you know, I think what I felt was, okay, this is a big job. This is a huge job. But it's important. It's important to the company. They're not finding anybody to do the job. Why not me? You know, and I think I really felt confident that I didn't feel confident at all that I knew everything I needed to know, but I felt confident that I could lead and that I could learn what I needed to know. Because I think that's one of the biggest things that, that I've always tried to do is just to not, I don't need to, and I don't want to be the loudest voice in the room. I don't need to be the know-it-all in the room. I don't need to fill, you know, every conversation with what Todd thinks. I'm a more introspective person, and I just love figuring people out and figuring problems out. And so I knew that this was going to be several years of just constant problems. And some of them that where I sat, I had no idea how I was going to fix them. But I had confidence that I could fix them.
Yeah, and you had confidence that, like you said, you know people and you knew Todd that, you know, I think sometimes that's a misnomer that a leader thinks they have to have all the answers. One of my favorite quotes is, if you think you know it all, you're clearly in the wrong room. If you think you're the smartest person, you're clearly in the wrong room. But love so much of what you just said, because you said, you know, you don't want to be a know-it-all. I heard somebody recently say, don't be a know-it-all, be a learn-it-all.
Yeah. For sure. And I'm a constant, I'm always like just soaking things up and love being a sponge. And I think even John has commented there at Panera, how important it was for him to assemble a strong leadership team. Right. And that's always key. You've got to recruit and find those people that are going to be that leadership team that you can leverage and use to move big things forward. And that was the other thing that I felt like I had kind of shown an ability, and I knew how to attract good people and actually help them become successful and part of the team. And so I think, you know, that's what gave me the confidence. And again, we were doing crazy things. So none of us really knew what we were facing. But, you know, just week after week, month after month, problem after problem, you know, it just, you could see it start to become a team. And again, Jake Fritz was so instrumental coming in too, at such a critical moment when we were facing challenges, and just really providing an ability for us to take it to the next level, and the support that I got from him and Kathy McGillicutt. It was really a really cool journey. And, you know, again, it doesn't always work out when you raise your hand. So I don't want anybody to think that, you know, raising your hand, you're like off the hook, that they'll say, oh, it's okay if he fails because he raised his hand. No, you're still on the hook.
Yes.
But, and you hear me, we had tons of failures. We had tons of problems. We had fires all over the place. But at the end of the day, after doing that for 3.5-4 years, you know, I actually leveraged that experience, and Kathy had the confidence in me to skip from a director to a CIO.
Yeah.
And she threw me into another problem area that needed some help, and started all over again. So
I love it. Well, you know, you've kind of given me a really good segue here, because, and you've already kind of alluded to it, but in the very beginning, Todd, you said, I was taught that it's not about me. It's not about me. It's something bigger than myself. And I know for you, one of the drivers in the things that motivate you is the ability to have an impact on people. Mm-hmm. So as you were leading that, I mean, you know, there's so much there. I mean, we don't have time to go into all that, but you said, you know, you knew that you knew how to build good teams and you help people be successful, you know? And so really, to attract people, though, you have to have a good leadership style to do that, or people are not going to want to work for you, right? Yeah. So, I mean, what would you say your leadership style is? And I think I know. I mean, you know, from what you've said today, but
I think I'm more of a servant leader. You know, I really invest a lot of myself into my team. And again, I always find it funny, you know, because people will ask me when I take on a new job or when I'm coming in to a new role, well, what's your plan? What's your playbook? And I'm like, well, my plan is to listen and learn for about 6 months and to help solve whatever I can solve, and then we'll figure out what our plan is. And so
I love that.
I know what I'm good at, and I know what I'm not good at. And
Yeah.
I know that it makes no sense for me to come into a new situation and just deploy my plan. I have my philosophies and I have my way of doing business, but I'm all about solving what the business needs and what the organization needs that I'm working with, you know. And so I've always tried to just use all the experiences I've had in my past to inform what I'm doing, to have just a sympathy for what people are going through, and to just try to get the team to where not only that we can solve problems together, but to where they can solve them without me, because I
Sure.
put
Oh,
them
I
in
love
that
that.
position to do it. Yeah, so I think it's the evidence for me, I guess, is that even with all the crazy things we did in that data center project, I was talking with Aaron Plaza the other day, who works at WWT now, and he was on the team. Tremendous guy. I can't believe the things that I asked him to do, right? Getting him up in the middle of the night over and over and over and over again. And yet he still talks to me. So I take that as a win that I didn't totally like ruin the
That
relationship.
relationship,
He still talks to me and we
yeah,
still laugh together.
sure,
That's what's important to me.
yeah. That's beautiful. I mean, you made the people on your team better, obviously, Todd. You know, so that's so good. So I was going to ask you, because you left Emerson, went as a CIO for Barry Waymiller, another iconic brand in St. Louis. If you're not familiar with Barry Waymiller, go read Bob Chapman's book, Everybody Matters. So you were there, and I was going to ask you, what were you brought in to do? And, but I bet you went on a listening tour.
For
I
sure. Oh,
bet you
for
just
sure.
listened, in the beginning.
Yeah. I think one of the things that was attractive to Barry Waymiller was my Emerson roots, because Barry Waymiller had conversations with Emerson leaders and was trying to adopt some of the discipline, some of the process of business reviews and other things. And so I think my experience was really a nice fit for where Barry Waymiller was on their journey. And so I was able to, come in and just bring a lot of that experience to help not just the IT organization, but the organization as a whole navigate through that, right? Because it's hard for other organizations to emulate another organization because you're not that organization. And some of it was as much about, let's not try to be like Emerson in that way because we're not Emerson, but let's try to leverage this piece because that does fit. And so I think I was able to just help with some of those types of things, and definitely a global IT organization, because Barry Waymiller is a collection of 110 acquisitions over a large number of years, a lot of technical debt, a lot of kind of disparate IT organizations, you know. So we you kind of talked about it earlier, the job of a CIO. We really made a big transformation of trying to shift dollars and people away from just run the business activities and try to get more of the budget freed up to work on transformational business projects. And we made some pretty good strides in that. And I think, again, Barry Waymiller, great, great company, great roots, great St. Louis company.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and then in 2022, you were hired as a CIO for Clayco, another amazing company. We've already talked about Don
2020,
Emhoff.
actually.
2020.
Yeah.
Yes, 2020. Yeah.
I remember it
That's
very
a
well, Lisa.
great time to go
Yeah.
for a new job, Todd.
Does anybody remember what happened in March of 2020?
Nah, nobody remembers what happened in March. We will forever be etched in our minds, but that is, Yeah, that's crazy. So you must have accepted that job maybe before the lockdown on the 18th or whatever it was. But, you know, I want to give Don Imholtz a shout out. And Todd, you already know, I've told you in the sidebar conversation, just the respect and admiration and gratitude that I have for him. But he was the interim CIO at the time.
Yep.
And he was ready to move along. And, you know, I think he was very instrumental in picking you. You know, but how has that journey been? How was that journey with coming in during the middle of a lockdown?
Well, I think as a CIO, if you aren't kind of built to use a crisis to make something good happen, then you're probably in the wrong job. Literally, I walked in the door on Monday, and that Thursday we're sending everybody home. Literally my first week on the job. That was obviously a tremendous challenge. But again, I draw back to the data center days, right? It's like, all right, here's what we're dealing with. Let's start solving problems, you know? And so we just got very focused on one thing after another. We need to keep the business running. We've got to enable people to work from anywhere. And this was a very, very in the office culture for sure. And the team was up to it. We literally didn't miss a beat. And in the midst of all of that, in the first 6 months, actually, we not only were transforming to support the business, we replaced the entire network. We replaced all the compute infrastructure. We moved, you know, a tremendous amount of workloads to the cloud. It was really a catalyst for transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And we just marched through it. And it really was kind of a blessing in disguise, you know, because it just provided that catalyst for change. And it removed a lot of debates. And so, you know, it was a crazy time for all of us, but the resilience of the Clayco business. And then again, you mentioned Don had done a great job in his interim status of starting to get the team organized and lay in some foundation and work with the leadership team. And so, you know, that was just a great way to come in then, with him already laying some of that pipe and creating some momentum that we were able to just pick up on. And I so appreciate just keeping Don involved. He was kind of engaged on a quarterly basis for the first 2 years, just as an advisor, and provided just a lot of great input and feedback to us. And it's been a crazy journey. You know, when I look back, the organization is, it's a lot larger than it was, about double now what it was.
That's amazing.
And Jim Havel, who's our CFO, you know, longtime St. Louis CFO, I take a lot of pride in his comments, because he was here before. He's seen good. He knows what good is. And he always makes the comment, you know, that the topics we were talking about when I joined were like, what kind of music are we going to play in the bathrooms? And why isn't it working? And now the topics we're talking about are how are we going to use AI to transform the construction industry?
Yes.
And so it's been just a huge shift, just to raise the level of discussions, because that's for anybody wanting to be a CIO. If you can't go in and put out the fires and create calm around the things that you just have to deliver, you're not going to get to talk about the other stuff.
Sure.
And so that's right. You got to do the first job first.
Yeah.
And that's how you punch your ticket to have the other conversations. But you can't skip that part.
That's great advice. Yeah. Some of those things are just table stakes. They've got to be there. Right. And
for sure.
I love what you just said, creating the calm around those things and getting those things done fast and efficiently, and then you can talk about more strategic things like the AI and other things to move the business forward. So, you know, I mean, Todd, I'm just going to tell you, it's going to be so much fun to watch Clayco, because I know you guys are kind of, you're leading the charge, you know, in construction. Unfortunately, you know, is one of those areas that, that maybe is not as far along as, as like maybe fintech, you know, the finance, industry. But I want to circle back one more thing before you talk about something extra. You know, we have been watching Ted Lasso as a family, and, you know, I'm not sure, the first season was really good. I'm not really sure how season four is going to be, but, you know, we love it. We love how Ted, it kind of goes back to what you, we were talking about before and your impact on people, but, you know, he really, what we love about it, he's not just striving to make amazing soccer players.
Yep.
He's working to make amazing human beings.
Yep.
You know, and he has so many isms and so many quotes that I just love. And our mutual friend, Dan Roberts, always says, everybody has isms. But, you know, what are some of your isms? I mean, if, you know, the things that you say to the team a lot that, that they could probably repeat back to you because you have that ism. So, like, I'll give you Don's. If you don't know Don's, here's Don's. His big ism is, come to me early and you have a coach.
Yeah.
Come to me late and you have a judge.
Yep.
So
I might have heard that from him a couple times.
Yeah, you may have. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a couple things, you know, and we kind of touched on this earlier, but, you know, I always talk to the team about, you know, especially when you're in a crisis, that, you know, never waste a crisis. Right. Because crises, I'm proof, right? I used crises and problems and fires to prove myself, and I used them to make our team better. And that's really, the crises are such a tremendous learning environment if you can leverage them. If you let them pass and go away and you don't kind of soak that in, you're really missing an opportunity. Similar to Don, you know, bad news does not smell better over time. It doesn't get better. So you may as well deal with it. And I always talk to the team too, because I think people don't always understand. It's really not whether news is good or bad. It's just news. So what are you going to do? What are we going to do about it? You know, and sometimes good news is really not good because it's going to cause other issues. Sometimes bad news really isn't that bad.
Right.
And I think people hear me too, you know, that if you're worried about getting fired, you're thinking about the wrong things. You know, you shouldn't come into work every day worried about if you're going to be able to keep your job. Because that's like, to me, that's like you're thinking about, how do I just stay above the line, right? To me, you shouldn't even be thinking about that. Think about, you know, how can I do something special or impact somebody today?
Yeah. You know, I heard somebody talk, and I cannot, my brain is a little muddled right now, so I can't even credit the right person. But recently I heard somebody talk, oh, I know who it was. It was one of the keynote speakers at G2I this year. And I loved what he said. He said, be a value creator in your organization. And Todd, to this day, I remember Bhavani Mirthalingam, who, you know, the chief data officer at Ameren, brilliant. And I remember her saying one time, I've never, ever worried, Lisa, about building my resume. All I've ever worried about is bringing value to every organization I've been in. And my resume builds itself. Yep. So I love that. I love that whole mindset. Well, let me ask you this question, Todd. This is called Something Extra. What do you believe is a something extra that every leader needs?
Yeah, I was thinking about that quite a bit, you know, and I just did a talk at SEIUE back, you know, time flies, maybe 6 months ago, on empathetic leadership. And I think for leaders, the key is kind of competitive empathy, right? Because a lot of people kind of hear empathy and they think immediately kind of weakness, or they think not achievement oriented, or they think sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yes.
And I think when you can combine, I'm a very competitive person, but it's surrounded by empathy and humility that I try to hold on to each day. Mm-hmm. And so I think you can lead in a different way if you can kind of keep those things in check, because I think competitive empathy creates a team that wins together, right?
Together.
And they want to go with you instead of, hey, look at me, I'm out ahead of everybody and it's all about me. So I think that's, I think that's
what's key. Oh, I love it. Nobody has ever said that, competitive empathy, because really and truly, who wants to be on a losing team?
Yeah. Yeah, nobody.
Yep. I mean, nobody does. They want to follow a leader that wants to win.
Yeah.
But there's a right way and a wrong way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, for sure.
It. And I think having the empathy is the right way. Well, listen, this has been so much fun for me. I so appreciate your time and cannot wait for our listeners to hear from you. Todd, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep being the amazing leader you are. And, you know, Clayco's very lucky to have you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And same to you. It's really been fun, and appreciate your partnership and just the leadership that you bring to the St. Louis community. And it's going to be fun to continue to partner on other things. So
absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.